Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating and Air Conditioning, Gabe Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you. As we all know, I'm a big fan of chaos. Sometimes maximum chaos.
You've mentioned that a few times.
I have. You might hear it at least three times a day.
Yeah, it might be on the intro, you know, maybe.
You might hear it at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 1 o'clock every weekday afternoon. The SEC. Our hope is alive for a six-team tiebreaker. It could happen.
You're getting your wish. You're getting your wish.
We're getting there. Texas, Texas A&M, Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Alabama. So here's where things stand, as I said. Texas and Texas A&M, who play each other next week, are both 5-1. Georgia is 6-2. They are done with their SEC schedule. They have two games remaining, but they have played all of their SEC games. So Georgia is done at 6-2. Tennessee is 5-2 with a game at Vanderbilt next week. Ole Miss and Alabama are both 4-2. Ole Miss is at Florida and home to Mississippi State. Alabama is at Oklahoma and home to Auburn. So here's how things could shake out. According to Seth Emerson at The Athletic, there is one clean but not very likely way for first and second place to be settled to determine the entrance in the SEC title game. Texas and Texas A&M both win next week, and Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Alabama all lose at least one more game. That would leave Georgia playing the winner of Texas and Texas A&M in the SEC title game. Mm-hmm. Everybody has that. Otherwise, according to Emerson, this will come down to the newly installed SEC tiebreakers. The first tiebreaker is head-to-head. The second is record versus common opponent. The third is record against top teams in the standings and working your way down. Emerson says it is unlikely any of the top three tiebreakers will settle it, which means we have to go to number four. The combined record of teams' conference opponents, in essence, schedule strength. As of now, here are the combined opponents' records for the six contenders, including future opponents. Alabama at number one, 27-26, followed by Texas A&M, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, and Ole Miss. So based on that tiebreaker, it would be Alabama versus the winner of Texas and Texas A&M in the SEC title game. There's a lot to figure out, and that's the best part about all of this, is that we are far from figuring out what the standings are going to be in the SEC.
Yeah, we are. I'm just looking at this, and I would love for it to come down to, as you coined it, maximum chaos. I would love for it the last day to come down to maximum chaos. I think that's what we all want, in a sense. That's alluring to me, at least. But if you look at these teams, to me, watching every team that's in the top 10 or top 12 that's eligible for a potential playoff berth, Georgia is still the best team to me. They've had the hardest schedule. They started off with Clemson, and Clemson has turned out to be a pretty good team. I think Clemson has two losses now. But they're still vying for a spot in the college football playoff.
They've got the inside track to win that league.
Then you look at the Alabama game. That was a close game. Actually, they came back and took the lead in that game. Then they beat Texas. They lost to Ole Miss, which I think they wanted to ball that game up and forget about it very quickly. But if you look at their schedule, Georgia, to me, is the best team in college football. Now, a lot of it hinges on Carson Beck. If Carson Beck plays like he did last week and like he did last year and like he did at spots this season, clearly, hands down, Georgia's the best team. But we can't always say that about Carson Beck because he hasn't played that way. He's been probably one of the most inconsistent quarterbacks in college football. But if he's on his game, there's nobody that can beat Georgia, I don't think. Because Georgia has proven, even when they're playing bad, they put themselves in a position, i.e. the Alabama game, to go out and potentially win games like that. They are tested. They have the coach that can do it. I just think this is the best team in the country, and their schedule, to me, was the hardest schedule in the country. And they proved that, hey, listen, we're still a top-tier team. You got to understand, this is a team that last year lost one game and didn't make it to the playoffs because they lost in a championship game. How does that happen when you go the whole season, don't lose a game, and then you lose in your championship game, and then they leave you out? That shouldn't happen. But to me, Georgia hasn't dipped too far from where they were last year. A lot of it is because their quarterback is so inconsistent, and he wasn't that way last year.
There's a couple of things to consider here. Number one, I think these leagues that have this enormous list of teams, the number grows every two or three years, they add a couple more. The number four tiebreaker, which it very well could go down to, right, is what? Your opponent's conference record, combined record of your conference opponents. But that's flawed. Because not everybody that implies that everybody's playing the same schedule, and you're not. So you could play, you could have had a really tough game. I saw this, and I don't know which athletic writer it was, but he was comparing, for example, in the college football playoff, who's a tougher opponent to play, Kentucky or Colorado State? He was making Kentucky's record is not very good, right? Kentucky is, at this point, let's see, where's the SEC standings? They got a losing record. They're 1-6 in the league, 4-6 overall. But winning at Kentucky, or even take Auburn, 1-5 in the league. Winning at Oklahoma, 1-5 in the league. That's not an easy game. But in the conference record, it is what it is. That's a... especially if you were playing at Oklahoma. Like Tennessee's win at Oklahoma. That's not an easy place to go in and win. They did, but that record will show in the strength of conference record as a 1-5, and that's not the same thing as maybe beating, let's say, Vanderbilt at home or Missouri at home when Missouri had their quarterback hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, so like there's things that are flawed with that tiebreaker system, but you're forced to do it when you have 50 teams in the league, which brings you to the next point, is it an advantage to even make the SEC championship game?
And it's funny you mention that because Paul Feinbaum was asked this very question on Get Up today. This was what Paul Feinbaum said on whether it is a detriment for an SEC team to qualify for the title game.
Making the conference championship game should automatically be better than not making it. So getting in there and losing should not put you behind a team that didn't make it and thus didn't have that opportunity to lose. That's how I view it. Paul, you are the dean of the SEC. How do you view it?
I agree with you, Greeny. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey told me last week it should be a reward to get to the championship game. But the bad news is it is not. Kirby Smart last year had an undefeated regular season. He went to the championship game, lost to Nick Saban, and got knocked out of the playoffs. So, yes, it's what Lane Kiffin said is correct. You'd rather not go there, but the problem is you don't have a choice in the matter. There's going to be a tiebreaker, and you get in based on a number of tiebreakers. But the situation for Kiffin could be very dangerous. Here's why he doesn't want to go, because if he goes with a 10-2 record and loses, he is probably going to get knocked out because he has a loss to Kentucky, which is extremely bad. So it doesn't matter whether you want to or not. You better win the game if you go, though, if you end up with three losses, because you're very likely going to get knocked out.
That was Paul Feinbaum on Get Up, and these are the comments from Lane Kiffin that he was referencing. This Kiffin said this on Monday during his weekly news conference. Quote, I've talked to other coaches, so I'll just kind of give you the feeling from some other coaches that, you know, they don't want to be in it. You know, the reward to get a bye in the college football playoff versus the risk to get knocked out completely, I mean, that's a really big risk just to get a bye. I think it's ended up being a very unique situation of all postseason sports, the way that system is set up there, and how you could go to the SEC championship game and get knocked out of the CFP race, and if you don't go, you're in.
He has a point. He does have a point here. That last game is going to be critical in all of this. That Texas and Texas A&M game.
I believe that is next week.
Next week, yeah. That Texas and Texas A&M, because it has, you know, a team like Georgia who, yeah, if they play Texas, they've beaten Texas already, so I'm sure they will feel much more confident walking in playing Texas. Now, I'm sure they'll be confident whether they play Texas or Texas A&M. But the backdrop to that or the flip side of that is if you lose that, you're done. You're not even making it to the playoffs because now you would have had three losses in your season. And that team, say Tennessee, who's sitting right outside with two losses, they're like, good, let Georgia go. Please let them go. Because if Georgia lose, now that pushes us up into the college football talk. That pushes us up. Now we become hopefully one of those 12 teams. So I'm with Lane Kiffin in this situation. Like, I would rather not make it and have two losses than to make it with the two losses. And then that's the end-all, be-all. That championship game, the SEC championship game, is it. Like, if you lose, you're going to a bowl game. If you win, now you're in the college football playoffs.
It's even a wash for the champion. Let's say Texas wins against Texas A&M. They win out. Mm-hmm. They win the SEC championship game. Well, that's great, but they still will end up playing the same amount of games because they get a bye in the tournament, mm-hmm. but they still play the extra game because they went to the SEC championship game.
Yep.
So it's not an advantage. I think, like, if you're sitting, like, let's say Lane Kiffin gets what he wants, doesn't go to the championship game. Well, he's got to win four games in the postseason, mm-hmm. and Texas would have to win in that hypothetical four games to win a championship.
Yeah.
So you don't get a shortcut for even winning the championship.
It's just when you get the bye.
We know there's only really when you if you're applying logic to this, the only real solution would be to not have the championship game. It's not a shortcut in any way. There's only one reason to have it.
Money. Yeah.
And that will be what would you sacrifice the money for the good of your players and for the team?
Nope. I can answer that question right now. Nope. They won't.
Yeah, because it's obvious that the loser...
Well, they will not.
It's obvious that the loser of the championship game is really in peril, mm-hmm. right, of getting passed up by everybody else that's going to be vying for an at-large bid.
Okay, so
here's... that's going to be the third loss for that team. That will be the third loss, which will... That's going to be a major, major strike against them.
So here's a question for the both of you, because Texas and Texas A&M play at the end of the season. Which one would you rather be? Would you rather be the losing team or the winning team? Because you figure whoever loses that game, they still, in theory, they still should make the college football
playoffs.
But you're
going to be in a big pile of teams that have two losses,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
You get thrown in there.
But even if you make a championship game and lose in a championship game, you
then
still
you got
in a
three
position.
Losses.
You're still in the position you were in had you not made it.
Yeah.
It's quite the conundrum.
I think there's going to be some very upset. There's going to be some very upset SEC teams mm-hmm. at the end of this whole thing.
Nicole Auerbach of NBC Sports tweeted this earlier. Willie, you brought this to our attention. She said, quote, there's no real need for conference championships with the college football playoff. You could go by standings and save the wear and tear. But those games are valuable to the leagues themselves, so teams sitting guys slash trying to avoid playing in them is a bit of a nightmare. Fans will hate to hear it, but that's part of the appeal for the SEC and Big Ten regarding their multiple automatic qualifiers idea. You could guarantee spots for both participants in the title game. You could have a third place game too with an automatic qualifier at stake.
It's another thing that I think coaches have never had to deal with before, but the grind of marching to a championship, even for the teams that make it, you have to be thinking, can I win four games? How do I? Because there's going to be attrition of your roster to win four postseason games. That's an extra month of huge, high-stakes games. So like, if you're thinking, hey, I gotta play in this SEC championship game and then win four games. That's what the loser of the
either way, you gotta play in five games.
Well,
four.
If you lose a championship game and then still get a bid at large, then you've got to play in that championship game and then play four postseason games to win
the
whole thing.
Essentially, play five games.
That's huge. Yeah. Now the winner gets the bye.
Yeah.
But so it's not a real advantage because you still got to play the championship game.
But that's on. But that's only.
It's messed up. There's no. You come back to the same conclusion. Why are we having this championship game?
But that's only really. When you're talking about, let's be honest about this, that's only really if you're talking about the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yep.
Big 12 or the ACC, they don't have to worry about that part.
We have one texter, Xavier, on our text line saying he's a Georgia fan. I don't want them to make the SEC championship.
Exactly.
We are guaranteed into the playoffs with a three-week break before the playoffs.
Yeah, you're right. So if I'm Georgia, I'm like, hey, listen, I don't want to go. I really don't. Y'all fight it out.
Logic.
Exactly.
That's not what you should want. How valuable is your championship game if that's the feeling of more than one team in your league? Yes.
At least not this year.
So don't play it.
It would be more detriment to your program than it would be valuable, in a sense, I guess.
What do we think about Tennessee now after they lose to Georgia? I'm looking at the projections for the next college football playoff rankings by Heather Dinich at ESPN. She has Tennessee as the first team out after losing to Georgia, with their toughest remaining game being here on November 30th at Vanderbilt. She writes, the Vols were number 11 in the projected ranking, but they get bumped out of the bracket because BYU needed a spot as the fifth highest ranked conference champion. The safest place to be in the committee's ranking is 1 through 10. So is there any path that Tennessee has? I mean, not only do they need to win, but they need multiple other teams to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, there's not even teams in there.
What do you think? I mean, I believe we could talk about the SEC title game, or do you think the playoff in general?
Well, they were ranked, what, seventh last week in the poll? They were ranked seventh. This week, they might fall out of the top 10. They'll fall out of the top 10. So where are they? Are they 11 or are they 12? I think the way they looked in that second half against Georgia, that may have doomed them. And then depending on how they play against Vanderbilt, because that's not an easy out for them. They have just as much, I believe, on Vanderbilt's side with winning that game than it would be on Tennessee's side as well.
I think Tennessee should root for Vanderbilt against LSU because that might put Vanderbilt back onto the fringe of the top 25. And you're going to Vanderbilt, you want that Vanderbilt win to carry some weight.
Yeah.
Let's assume that they don't make the SEC championship game, which I think you're telling me all the tiebreakers and the projections right now don't have them as a great shot of making.
According to ESPN, the Volunteers have a 0.3% chance of making their conference championship game.
Okay, so they need to make it as an at-large. And they're probably going to be left out of this one tonight. And that
you think?
Yes, I think that's the consensus. Maybe they sneak in the last one, but they're going to be bubble
either way. ESPN's projection has them as the first team out.
Yeah, but
tonight. Let's
not worry about what happens tonight. The key question is, can the Vanderbilt win carry some weight for them?
Mm-hmm. If indeed they win that game.
Well, obviously we know Vanderbilt would love nothing more than to be the team that knocks them out of the playoffs, right? That would be the ultimate Vanderbilt fans' dream right there. That would make their year. But If they are able to win out, you want the Vanderbilt game to carry weight, and then you probably need one or two of these other teams to lose, and you hope the committee puts you in there. But that first team out, whoo, there's going to be some angry teams.
Yeah, right, but again, now we're looking at
who would be the other teams? Who are the other teams besides Tennessee?
So the first four out, according to ESPN's projection, Tennessee is the first of the first four out, followed by SMU at 9-1, Colorado at 8-2, and Clemson at 8-2.
But SMU is the leader in the ACC. Mm-hmm. They're undefeated. So their only loss is to BYU. So they are going to have a chance to play their way in and get a bye, for that matter, right? That's where
Big 12.
That's what SMU has going for them. They control their own destiny, basically.
Is SMU leading or is Miami leading?
SMU is. SMU's undefeated in the conference.
Oh, that's right. They are. They are 6-0.
Miami lost a couple weeks ago.
That's right. Clemson is 7-1 in the ACC. Miami is 5-1 in the ACC.
It's looking like Clemson versus SMU, unless SMU stumbles.
A storied rivalry.
Yes.
Between Clemson.
The Atlantic Coast Conference.
Between Clemson and SMU. But this projection from ESPN for tonight, I know it's, there are many more of these to come. Top four, Oregon number one, Texas two, Miami three, Boise State four. First round matchups, number 9, Alabama at number 8, Notre Dame. Number 12, BYU at number 5, Ohio State. Number 11, Georgia at number 6, Penn State. Number 10, Ole Miss at number 7, Indiana. Those are the projections.
Man, but you almost—I shouldn't say this, but
go ahead.
You almost feel bad for UT because, like Ole Miss, like Ole Miss, it's like the playoffs was designed for teams like y'all that in previous years, your fan base was like, "Oh, we only lost this many games last year. We should be in. Look at who we beat. We beat Alabama, yada, yada." But then you have an opportunity to do it this season, and you lose against Arkansas, which you shouldn't have lost to. And then you come out and you play bad in the second half against Georgia, and Georgia basically just owns you in that second half. It wasn't even close. So now you're in a position like, man, now we need a lot of help just to get into the college football playoffs. Whereas it shouldn't have been this way with UT this year nor last year. Now, I know last year was different because their quarterback got hurt. But this year and last year were your prime opportunities to get yourselves into the college football playoffs. And y'all found a way to mess it up each time.
Well, how many ultimately will the league get in? The league champion will get in. We know, will there be four at large or three?
Including the champion?
Including the champion. That's automatic. Uh-huh. Will they get three additional or four?
Oh, I think three. I don't think they'll get four.
I'll say three and four total, including the champion.
Three at large?
Yes.
Well, that leaves somebody who's going to be in the top.
A couple of teams.
I mean, that leaves a very good team out sitting there probably with two losses.
Steve is on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Steve, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, I just want to make a comment, see what you think about it, the conference champion. If you win your conference, do you get home field in the first game?
Yes.
I don't know if so, but I was just thinking maybe that'd be an incentive. And even if you have a weaker record, would that be an incentive to get into the championship game?
Thank you for calling,
just
Steve.
To get that home.
The quarterfinal is home sites?
No. It's so the first four games, so like the before
the
like
through
the
12,
like the
six
four
through
at
11,
large, they do not
10.
Get home field advantage.
So you get a bye, but you don't get a home
field. Those games are played at the major
bowl games.
Bowl
yeah, the major.
Okay,
bowls.
So there's another thing to think about. You get the bye, but you don't. That first game isn't a home field
right,
advantage.
You're playing at the Sugar Bowl or the Orange Bowl or the Rose Bowl. You're not playing on campus. The 5 through 12.
They get to play
six
at
through
they
11,
get
to, 7 yeah. through 10, 8 through 9. Those games are played on campuses. The other games are played at neutral sites. Mm. So if you are
it's another reason that the winning the conference championship game isn't all that great shakes.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee will join us. Vanderbilt had an off week last week. They are back in action this week at LSU. We will preview that game and more with Clark Lee. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lea. The Commodores are back in action this weekend at LSU. Clark, as you get your team back into a rhythm after reconvening following your off week, where has been your primary focus as you prepare for LSU this weekend?
The focus last week was just to try to get our the top end of our depth chart healthy. Guys that have played a bunch of snaps, we needed to take care of them. So we pulled back on the football activity. Those guys trained and conditioned, but really spent time on their bodies and spent time in recovery. We practice kind of our depth players and our young players, and I thought it was a great week that way, and we had a lot of fun on the field getting to scrimmage some and that sort of thing. But that's been the focus. I think to start out, I thought we had an extra practice on Sunday where we normally just meet. We got out on the field and moved around a bit. I thought it was spirited and good. Today was another good day. It seems to me like we got a little spring back in our step, but in the season, you're never fully recovered. So we're still being conscientious about how much we're out on the field, how much hitting we're doing. Again, the goal is that we're taking a healthy and fresh team to LSU to play a tough team in a tough environment.
Clark, a visit to LSU is always difficult, but when you consider the fact that LSU as a team has been reeling as of late, three consecutive losses to some tough teams. They lose at Texas A&M. They lose at home to Alabama. They lost last week at Florida. When you consider where LSU is as a team, I mean, I can only imagine that environment becomes even tougher for your team this weekend.
Yeah, this is a prideful program and a prideful fan base, and they're going to, both the team and the fans will show up with a point to prove. And, independent of all that, I mean, our success this year has all started with a focus on us and on our performance. And so that's been my push to the team. We understand the challenging environments in this league. It's part of the reason that you want to play in the SEC. We also understand that every team in conference that we play against is good. They're skilled, and we have to focus on our strategy, on our identity, making sure that's intact in our process, so that it's there for us when we need it on Saturday. And that's where we'll focus our energy. We'll work through some crowd noise and things like that, but on the whole, the game's going to be about our connection to our identity, our strategy, and the ability for us to execute over four quarters.
We'll talk with Clark Lea, head football coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores, who will be at LSU this weekend. Now, Coach, prior to the bye week, that South Carolina game, it just looked like your team, the bye week was much needed. It looked like your team was a little bit tired. What did you learn from that game heading into your bye week? Things that you can correct moving forward?
Well, I think to your point, the biggest correction we need to make was just getting the guys rejuvenated. I started to see this set in when we played Auburn, to be honest with you. I just felt like in all three phases, I saw a tired team. And some of the conversations I had with guys after that game, the feelings they had around, fatigue setting in over the course of the game. And, we were able to find a way to win. And we kind of found the energy reserves when we needed them. But, I sensed then that the wear and tear of the year was starting to have an effect on performance. We really stripped back practice heading into the South Carolina game, and I just don't know that we were able to get back to the personality that we had been playing with that had been so effective. And I want to stop short of making an excuse, because ultimately we're just a team that has to play a certain way to be in games and to win games. And obviously there are things structurally that we need to improve upon from South Carolina, but I think the biggest disappointment that I had and that our program had was that we didn't feel like we carried the same attitude and kind of competitive edge over four quarters that's made us, you know, who we are. And it's a great reminder that, you know, when we don't play to that personality, when we don't play to our identity and our strategy, that, you know, we're in a league where teams can put distance between you and them. And we happened to run into a South Carolina team that was, I think, is hitting a stride here and is a physical team and a good team. So all that to say, the biggest focus on what we needed to improve upon was on the physical aspects of our performance. I mean, obviously you go through self-scouting exercises, and a lot of that at this point in the year is really, you know, eliminating things that are on the call sheet that you don't do well, amplifying the things on the call sheet that you do well, and just doubling down on kind of the base structures and the, you know, offense, defense, special teams, you know, identity that you know, again, make us who we are and make us effective in our execution.
Now, your quarterback, Diego Pavia, he was trying to get an extra year and came back that he wasn't going to be able to get that extra year, but he's appealing it. What conversations have you had with him since the ruling came down?
Well, the initial response was not unexpected. Mm-hmm. There's I think another meeting that'll be held early in December that'll give us more kind of perspective on where this thing ultimately is headed. You know, I support Diego. Mm-hmm. I love having him as a part of this program. I'm anxious to see where this goes in the courts. You know, that's about the extent of it for me. I mean, we don't talk a ton about what's next other than, you know, just I know this guy wants to play football as long as he possibly can, and I want to support him in that journey, mm-hmm. whether that's, you know, continuing to play in college or certainly pursuing NFL dreams. But the thing about Diego Pavia is, you know, you come across guys every now and again in this, you know, in this game that are just one of one. They're unique. Their approach, their attitude, their discipline. You know, this guy is really smart. He's a great teammate. He's a great community member. You know, he's become one of my kids' favorite, you know, my children, their favorite players, which always is meaningful to me because, you know, kids tend to see through kind of what's disingenuous, you know, and mm-hmm. Diego's such an authentically good person that that's why he has had the success on the field. That's why he'll continue to have success as a football player and ultimately why he's going to be wildly successful in life beyond the game. And so, again, a great team member, a great program member. I'm hopeful for him to you know, get that year back, but supportive of him no matter what.
Clark Lee is with us, Vanderbilt head football coach. And, Coach, I'm sure it's been a challenge for him, and he seems to have done really well going from a total unknown before the season started to getting all of his attention, and then you just throw on what Derek just asked you about with the you know, trying to gain another year, et cetera. How have you watched him balance all of that? Because that would have to be a challenge for a kid his age.
Well, he's yeah. I mean, I appreciate the perspective. You know, he's unique in this respect. I mean, I think he knows who he is. Like, there's a high level of self-awareness. Diego has an ability to engage in things that are external without giving himself over to them. And so he, you know, and I talked to him about this, I think it was last Thursday, just how impressive it is that he can navigate all those things that come up when you're getting this attention. You know, and he's way cooler than I am, by the way. So, you know, like I mean, I actually, y'all aren't supposed to laugh at that. You're saying, no, he's not. Mark, you're cool too.
You're cool, just not as cool.
Different kind of cool.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think it's, there's a maturity there. You know, there's a maturity there. He dedicates himself to the team. He dedicates himself to his process. So some of those things, if you just kind of can stay focused on, you know, what the process asks of you, it keeps you from lingering too long in kind of the what ifs that are out there. And look, it's the same level of discipline and focus that you want your own kids to have. I mean, it's impressive. And he loves to compete, you know, and he wants to be a great competitor, and he doesn't look at these, you know, opportunities as, you know, he doesn't take them for granted. And so, again, he's focused on how he can play the best he can possibly play in Baton Rouge on Saturday with all the things that are kind of brewing outside. He doesn't let that take his focus from the task at hand.
Clark, one more for you before we let you go. I'm curious the evolution, that the scheme that Jerry Kill, Tim Beck have brought in there with Diego and company. It's been such a joy to watch all of the details to it. How do you feel that they are doing with, as the league studies it and you get deeper in the league and they've seen more of the reps, how they keep trying to innovate and try to adjust to have a few more tricks up their sleeve?
Well, I think the first thing is, what you see is we're not getting cheap yards anymore.
Right.
So we can't bank on, you know, guys being out of gaps or chasing motions. And so it's exposed a little bit this need to just improve performance, you know, the fundamental tactical performance of our own team. And that's, you know, we've also played against some really good defenses too, which are going to contest space just based off who they are, you know, and now, we have to find ways to design space. So we've done that to a point, in some areas. Obviously the run game has kind of lagged behind. And then I think in the South Carolina game, you also saw this, it felt like Diego was under pressure a bunch. I know that we've focused a lot on, the ins and outs of our front play and how we, how we identify things, but also just the fundamental technical aspects that are going to allow for performance. In the end, you know, they're going to have 11 and we're going to have 11 in football. Once you get past the window dressing and the motions and shifts and trades and formations, you know, you have to be able at some point to create leverage, to win leverage, to move people and to create space. And some of that is going to be sticking with the design we've lived in, but just doing it a little bit better. And some of it, like you say, is maybe coming up with a couple other options that give us opportunities to find different space or find different leverage points that we can win. I hope through all of it that a fresher team is a team that protects a little better, that blocks a little better, and that finds ways to get open a little more effectively. And that was, you know, our primary focus last week was just getting guys back healthy.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee joining us on the program as he does every Tuesday afternoon. Clark, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck this weekend at LSU.
Thanks, guys. Y'all take care. Yep.
Clark Lee joining us on the program. Vanderbilt back in action at number 22 LSU this weekend. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063. The game. Stillman and Company coming up next at the top of the hour. The Predators, who normally play on Tuesdays, don't have a Tuesday game today. They wrap up their road trip tomorrow at Seattle. A late game, puck drop at 9, pregame at 8, right here on 1025-1063 The Game. It is a nationally televised game being broadcast on TNT. I believe the Predators' only TNT appearance this season. Brendan Burke, Jennifer Botterill, and Darren Pang will be on the call for that game tomorrow night at 9. But the Predators win on Sunday. They defeat the Vancouver Canucks. So if we're looking at this 7 of 8 games on the road stretch, which started with a back-to-back in Washington and Florida, Willie, correct me if I'm wrong, their record is 2-3-2 in those 7 games?
Yes, I would say so.
So 2-3
that is correct.
2-3-2 in those 7 games.
So they obviously they started off by losing the first two.
Right, they started 0-2, losing regulation games in Washington and Florida. They come home, they beat Utah. They go to Colorado, lose in overtime, go to Edmonton, lose in overtime, lose in regulation to Calgary, and then win in regulation against the Canucks. So
pretty tough stretch of teams.
When you and also considering the amount of travel that they've
four
had
time
to do.
Zones.
A lot, you know, normally a Wednesday night game in mid-November against the Seattle Kraken does not seem like an important game. But Willie, you mentioned this yesterday, you know, how we feel about the Predators over the course of these past 8 games. Well, I mean, that the result tomorrow night will play a big part in that. If they win, come back 3-2, it's not great. You would hope for more considering the hole that they dug for themselves at the beginning of the season, but getting points in 5 out of 8 games, you could certainly say that's respectable considering all of the travel. If they lose this game, let's say they lose in regulation, they come home 2-4-2, we're having a much different conversation. So as far as mid-season Wednesday games in November against the Seattle Kraken are concerned, it's a pretty big win for them tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, you're going back to the back-to-back Washington-Florida,
yes,
which incorporates all 4 of the time zones. I think they looked at the 5-game trip out west as its own thing. And I think that's why when they come home from Seattle after the game, if they win that last game, I think they will look at that trip and say, okay, good trip. You've got a little momentum coming back. You had some team bonding time. You know, they were together. The first road trip, Washington, Florida, there was no time for team bonding. That was a lot of travel. That was get in, play, hop a plane, go play, come right back. But I think they looked at this first road trip or this long road trip as really the first time you could actually do the things that you like to do on the road as a team to try to bond, do some team building.
If you exclude those 3 games, if you just look at this road trip, they are 1-1-2.
Right. So in my mind, 1-2-2 is quite a bit different feel, especially if you lost the last one in regulation, than 2-1-2. So this is a big swing game, and then you have a couple of days to regroup before you play a Winnipeg team on Saturday that obviously is off to a tremendous start, but maybe coming back to earth just a little bit. Winnipeg, I believe, has a huge game tonight against Florida, and that will be a headliner up
there.
They
do.
And then they go to Pittsburgh on Friday before they come to Nashville on Saturday. So, look, at some point along the trek here, Nashville is going to have to reel off, you know, some sort of stretch where they win 8 out of 10, 15 out of 20, something like that, to correct the hole that they have dug themselves. It doesn't have to happen right now. But I hear Barry Trotz talking about this a lot in segments, right? This would be a solid segment. Given the amount of travel they've done and the time zones and the teams they've played, a 2-1-2 road trip, I would at least say, would be stabilizing. They've still got some issues with the roster that they're trying to get better. The defensive game overall, I think, is correcting. It's getting better. They're not giving up as much free offense as they were at the beginning of the season. What has to kick in is the offense that you saw on Sunday night. They actually showed some explosiveness. The goal scorers, the top 6 guys made plays. If they can put it all together, I think that's the makings of the type of run we're talking about that has to happen eventually.
Predators captain Roman Josi will join our program right off the jump tomorrow at 11:05. Looking forward to speaking to Roman Josi. We'll have Jonathan Hutton, Chris Mason, Mitch Light. We'll get into Predators, Titans, college football, and we'll do it all tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman and Company coming up next, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a wonderful and blessed Tuesday. Peace.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.